My name is Cora, and you've likely heard some of the dialogue segments I've put up since starting in October. I hope you've enjoyed them, and welcome to my holiday special. As I was conducting interviews on a few different topics for this special, I realized that the connection in all of them was tradition. The holiday traditions we take with us as we get older and have our own families and celebrations, and the ones we create. So throughout this special, we'll hear from not only our interviewees, but I'll also be sharing some favorite traditions from members of the public who reached out to me to share. One pretty common holiday practice that is nearly a tradition, especially in Cape Breton, is drinking. I spoke to Brittany about what it's like to navigate the holiday season as a sober person and how we can be an ally to those in our lives who are choosing not to partake.
I'm Brittany. I'm in my mid-30s, and I've been sober for 5.5 years now, I believe, since April 2019.
And did you want to talk about your sobriety journey and like what led to it?
So essentially what led to it and what you'd probably hear from anybody else who finally got sober is you hit your rock bottom. I feel like I hit my rock bottom more than once before I realized that it was kind of like you have to give this up or you're going to die. And I didn't want to die, incidentally. And something that comes along with being sober is you want to die a whole lot less you did than when you were drinking. I don't know how it is for like other substances. Alcohol was the only thing I was ever addicted to. But that whole, I think I just need to save my life now, is what drove me to get sober. And I didn't attend any programs or anything like that. I literally just sat in my house and lost myself in online content moderation as a distraction and did so many word searches and crossword puzzles and just did books and books of those to keep myself busy until I wasn't thinking about getting drunk anymore, basically.
And how do you find the holidays as a sober person?
So the holidays as a sober person are strange because so much, especially here, And like, I don't know if it's an issue in all of Canada, but I know that on the East Coast and Cape Breton and Nova Scotia in general, everything is so focused around Christmas and New Year's and stuff being drinking holidays. And unless you have sober people in your life, you're going to be around people who are drinking and usually past their own limits pretty much all the time. And I know it's especially hard when you're freshly sober to be in an environment like that. So it kind of leads to a little bit of an isolation almost, where if you are newly sober, you might have to decline an invitation to that party. You might have to tell your family you can't hang out with them, you can't see them, even if it's Christmas or Christmas Eve, just because you're not ready to be around that and in that environment yet. And like, I'm at a point now where I have no issue being around other people drinking, unless someone's drinking and having a bad time. I find that very, very like triggering. It doesn't make me want to drink, but it puts me in a really bad headspace. So like for me, I'm lucky my partner doesn't drink and we mostly keep to ourselves around the holidays. And I find that like, even if you go, like, for example, I went to like a market the other day, like last weekend or something, and say there were 30 vendor booths, 15 of them were selling cider or wine or beer. Like, it's extremely alcohol focused, even when it's a Christmas market. So the temptation is always there. And if you aren't at a point in your own sobriety journey where you can turn that temptation down, I feel like it's dialed up to 11 around Christmas, New Year's, just December in general. And it's hard to just remove yourself. It's hard to attend an event unless it's one that's aimed at like children, which I don't have children. I'm not going to events aimed at children. It's hard to find adults only events and markets, fairs, festivals, dances, whatever, that aren't heavily, heavily focused on alcohol and drinking.
Do you find, even just not even around the holidays, but Cape Breton has such a drinking culture, do you find maybe growing up in that influenced alcohol abuse?
Oh, no, I would say it absolutely did. And I know that, like, I know that culturally, like binge drinking is way more a thing here. Like if you make friends from other places, like, you know, it's like, oh, well, they say so, and the French are always having wine, like, not the stereotype people in France, but in Europe, where like people might have wines with nearly all of their meals or whatever, they're drinking in a manner where they're not drinking to get drunk. Whereas especially in Cape Breton, like it's a pub crawl. You want to get drunk. You're going out on a Friday night. There's nothing else to do but get drunk. Like, the whole purpose of you drinking is to get drunk. It's not just to enjoy what you're drinking. And being around that for your entire life, essentially, yeah, because it's almost like there's nothing else to do. All you can do for, like, a fun time is get drunk.
Like, what advice would you have for someone who is newly sober going into the holidays? How to handle triggers or just avoid drinking?
So if you're newly sober, this is one of those things where you're going to have to know your own triggers, because, like, I've had friends trying this journey themselves that have given into the pressure from family members attending, like, a Christmas thing or a Christmas Eve thing or whatever. If you know there's any chance you're going to give into that pressure, it's one of those situations where you're going to have to put yourself first. Like, your mom or your grandmom might guilt trip you about spending Christmas with them, but if you know your family are hard drinkers, or Uncle Bob or something is going to be like, hey, here's a spiked eggnog, and you can't handle that yet, you've got to stay home. And it might feel hard and it might feel lonely for the first little while, but it's one of those things that down the line, when you're a couple years in, you're going to thank yourself, because you're still there to be able to experience whatever it is you're experiencing. It's a lot of removing yourself from situations. And if you can find a sober buddy, sober buddies are the best thing in the world. I got really lucky and made friends with people, ended up dating someone who just happened not to drink. They're not intentionally sober. It's just a part of who they are. So having any kind of support system of people that know that you know that they are not going to be pressuring you to do anything, or it's not even necessarily people pressuring you, people that make you feel like you have to drink. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Family members that get under your skin, or situations that get you really stressed out that you can't handle without alcohol, you have to just not be in those situations. And it will be really hard, and it will be really uncomfortable for a while, especially if you have to explain yourself, because you can turn down any drug in the world and no one's going to question it unless it's alcohol. People will question the hell out of that. And you can be as, like, forthcoming as you want. I like to make people uncomfortable if they try to pressure me. But you don't have to do that. No should be a full sentence. But, yeah, that's essentially it, is you have to be firm, as uncomfortable as it's going to be, for the first little while at least.
And how would, if someone wanted to be kind of an ally to their friend who is sober, whether or not they're sober themselves, what advice would you have for them, especially around Christmas gatherings, if you're having parties, you want to invite these people who are either newly sober or have been sober for a while, but you don't know how they're going to handle it? Like, is the inviting but not expecting, or what are the things that someone can do to be an ally to a sober person?
So being, like, completely transparent is good. Being like, hey, so here's what's happening. Here's what I expect. Do you think this is something you can handle? Don't just, I've experienced, like, having people make the decision unilaterally for me, just being like, well, I'm not going to invite her because, you know, she has troubles with alcohol, which does not feel great, especially when you find out about it later. But also inviting someone and then acting like if they do decide not to show up and they tell you, and then you're kind of like, and you act like crappy to them about it, that's not helpful either. So, like, essentially a middle ground of like, hey, here's what's going on. If you think this is something that you're comfortable with or you'd be interested in, you're very welcome to come. And if you feel like you can't go, I'm not going to hold that against you. Essentially things like that, if you're the person hosting or inviting. Another thing would be if you're somebody who has a drink on occasion, but, like, not all the time, I would ask your friend who's newly sober, trying to get sober, like, hey, do you mind if I have a drink? Or, like, would it be better if I just didn't bother tonight, kind of thing? Because I've had friends that, like, very much will have a drink, but they do not, like, they're not drinkers, if that makes sense, and who would, like, forego having a drink to make me feel comfortable. Not that I would ever ask that of them, but, like, it's something that I would definitely accept if offered.
Drinking has kind of taken on this sheen of being a traditional thing to do around the holidays. What are some traditions that even just you specifically, or that, like, sober people might resonate with, like, creating their own new traditions?
So I like to, I actually make a drink. It's just non-alcoholic. I like to do up some apple cider on the stove. You get a jug of apple cider from somewhere, and then you add in all the fixings. You just leave out the booze. I'm always big. This is one that can apply to anybody. I have like a whole list of Christmas movies that I'm always going to watch. I find that keeping your hands busy is, because that was part of how I got sober, was like the millions and millions of crosswords. I like doing like a craft. You know what I mean? Like some people might be like, oh, we'll have a couple drinks tonight and we'll watch a movie. How about we're going to sit down and like make something ridiculous? Like, I don't know, make your own tree decorations, make your own decorations for the house. I've done stuff like that a bunch of times, and play a board game. just sit down and play a board game.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Just keeping yourself. There's so many things that if you're doing something that you need to think about even a little, that will keep you busy and keep you entertained and keep you having fun without having to get drunk to do so.
Kobe from Sydney's personal favorite tradition is listening to their favorite Christmas songs, especially Alvin and the Chipmunks. Shanice from Whitney Pier gets together with her family on Christmas Eve to open one present, which is always a set of Christmas pajamas, and then they watch a holiday movie. Hillary from Glace Bay's favorite tradition growing up was having tacos and Mexican food on Christmas Eve night with her cousins. After our chat, Brittany reached out to me to mention the fact that another reason that people might choose to drink during the holidays is the fact that they'll be expected to spend time around people they'd rather not spend time around. Sometimes those people are family. Whether you're choosing not to spend time with your biological family for emotional reasons, like sticking to your sobriety, or you're simply too far apart geographically, there are other people you can spend this time of year with, your chosen family. I spoke to Percy and Clary about their chosen family traditions and how you can create your own.
My name is Percy Ager, and this is my wife,
Clary Ager, and we own a flower farm and event space called Ager Lane Flower Farms, and we're known as the Zucchini Wives online.
We have kind of a chosen family. There's six of us, like three couples, and for us, all but one of them, who's the one that's from here, you know, we don't live where our family lives,
right?
And
right.
So we miss, like, that level of important and intimate relationship that you have with family. And I feel like one of the nice things about having family, chosen or otherwise, is knowing that you have someone to spend the holidays with. At one of the, I think it was like a Thanksgiving dinner, we're going around saying what we're thankful for, and everyone kind of expressed that they were so thankful for this group of six people that give that level of trust and connection that you would find from family here, where none of us are close to our biological family. And I think it was kind of a solidifying moment for our group that we kind of decided we were going to be family for each other and be there for each other. And I find it really fun because I'm in a blended family. I'm the youngest. So I didn't grow up with my siblings because they had all moved on. And so I feel like I don't really know what it's like to have siblings, but I feel like I do now. I feel like this is like the experience, kind of fun. So I feel like for us, the chosen family is, it's more about, like, I think a level of relationship and that I have now with our chosen family that I had never even really had with some of my biological family, but it fills that need for, like, connection and structure and that I think we all need. And if you can't get it from your biological family, like, doesn't mean you can't get it from other people.
For me, if I were to say, like, what is chosen family? So we are queer women. We're, you know, two women together. And so a lot of people in the LGBTQ plus community, you know, have like what they call chosen family. So even, you know, as I was coming out, I was hearing that a lot, but I just didn't feel like I had that. And with these friends, these are the people that, you know, if you were in a really like vulnerable situation, whether that was with your health or, you know, mental health or something was happening, these would be the people that in an emergency, I wouldn't think twice to call, you know, and it wouldn't be people where I think, am I going to bother them? Like, no, like these are the people that, and vice versa, if anything was happening with them, like I see them in the same way as family, which is interesting too, because it's similar to having family where they have other friends and you do other stuff, but you just feel this deep connection, vulnerability, and love from them.
And loyalty. Yeah. I feel like I would see that a lot of people with that were close with their biological family, and they had this like fierce loyalty to each other. They also drove each other like
bonkers.
Yeah, like got on your nerves, but then still had this fierce loyalty. And I never really had that with any of my like biological family, but we definitely have that now. That balance.
We're like, don't talk about our family like that.
Yes, yeah, like, I've never loved someone more, and also had them drive me as crazy.
So we are on our third year of this new tradition where we
are third year in Cape Breton.
Yeah. So the 3 years in Cape Breton, what we do is we spend the holidays together. So like Percy said, there's six of us total and we bring all the dogs together and we rotate home. So this year is our turn to host. So we're really on like a tradition here. And we come together on Christmas Eve. We spend Christmas Day together and everyone goes home on Boxing Day. But it's a time we've carved out for each other. We started to even be like, you know, Christmas Eve, we have like a charcuterie board and then we play games and we wake up in the morning and we do presents. And the one thing that's been added to the tradition is the folks who host also do the stockings.
And then the other thing that we do for gifts is we do a Secret Santa so that there isn't this expectation that you need to buy everybody a gift.
Right.
And we draw names for Secret Santa on Thanksgiving.
So it really is a lead up to this tradition and something we do. And I feel like a lot of people want traditions, like even when you aren't maybe close with your family or there's been reasons why maybe you can't be together or people have passed. I think this feeling of wanting to have something that's like on this day, we do blank.
Something that invokes a little bit of nostalgia.
Yeah.
Too. I feel like especially Christmas is the time for nostalgia, and that's what I feel like makes Christmas kind of special. And the other thing that I think makes it, one of the things that we do that's special for our Christmas with our
chosen family, yeah,
is for our Secret Santa, the expectation is that you make or thrift the gift.
Right.
So that's also why we draw names so much
early
in advance.
Yeah.
So that if you have like a few months to make something. And that's been really cool because it
takes the pressure off.
It well, but also it's interesting to see the hidden skills that you maybe didn't know someone had,
yes,
when they make a gift. And I think it also helps put some of the emphasis back on some of the things that I like about Christmas, that is like thinking about someone that you love, what is something that they would really like, or what are some of the gifts that you have to share with your community. And by only having to do one gift, it takes out some of the big consumerism of it.
Mm.
And also when you're making someone a gift, you spend all these hours thinking about them.
Yeah.
And putting that, like, and that is also what I love about Christmas, is like thinking about the people that you love. So that's one thing that I think is really fun about ours, is that you try and like make the gift or thrift it.
Or I think this year we've added in or local businesses.
So. Yeah. So, but I think that's been like really fun just to see, especially with the challenge of trying to make it, what direction people go in.
And is there any traditions that you've brought from your childhood to the new traditions?
Movies were something that we did during the holidays for myself, often going to the movies. So we have every year now like watched movies, and this wasn't necessarily a tradition that we had, but kind of maybe like a fusion, because growing up, we never had a projector, but Ian and Leah have a projector and we have one too. Just the way our houses are set up, we don't have television screens. Instead, we have like projector walls. And last year, Chelsea at their house, they hung a sheet. Remember, we brought the projector. So I feel like it's kind of like this mix between, I grew up in the suburbs outside Toronto, so it was very much like you go to pick from 10 different movie theaters that are within an hour drive in any direction, where when we're in Middle River, there's nowhere we're going to go watch movies, and same in Northside, East Bay, and for us in Big Berdour. So yeah, I feel like that is something.
My family is a big card game family, my family of origin. And so we play like a board game or a card game, which I really like.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think those are the things that like come
to feels
mind.
Like we've really just taken different things that we love to do, whether it's at the holidays or not. We love to eat like charcuterie board. So I feel like we have taken the things that we love that are easy. We're still doing like a big dinner. Mm-hmm. So I guess that is like the tradition that's like carried mm-hmm. on, right? But we just do it in our own way and we move really slowly throughout the days. Yeah. That's definitely not something I took from my family. We moved pretty quick through life. So
I think one thing though that we haven't brought forward that I enjoy is everyone cooks
conflict
dinner, or but everyone cooks dinner and then everyone helps clean up. And yeah. It's not like gendered. All the women are doing this and then the men just sit there and drink. Also our crew, like no one either, everyone like either does not drink or generally doesn't like get drunk. And so that's also something that I like, that it's like generally kind of like a sober event. Like I think, you know, like you don't have a beer, but not the, that aligns with our group, you know? And I think that can be one thing that's challenging about like sometimes going back to your family of origin if is like someone's like really into drinking or something like that and you're not. Yeah,
it's collaborative. I would say so. It's not just one person is responsible for mm-hmm. hosting and creating an experience for everyone else. We're definitely like all co-conspirators to our
but
Christmas.
But then whoever's hosting kind of takes the lead, which is super fun. And I like the other thing about hosting during the sleepover part, it kind of feels like you're like, oh, I'm going away for Christmas, which like we could never afford to do when I was younger. But and even in this case, like, we're just driving to our friend's house and staying over, but it's super fun. And like, it also means that we're all actually there and no one is getting called away for work or having to pop in or whatever. It's like, we get kind of two nights, one full day in the middle where we're all together and just, it feels like we're kind of going away for Christmas, but we just kind of host and rotate at the different houses. It's really fun.
And what's your favorite part of the tradition now?
I really like that we switch houses. I think that's really cool because it allows each person to kind of bring a little bit of their own, you know, when you ask that question, like, what are we bringing forward from our own families? I think that we could probably answer that next Christmas because we're going to be hosting this year. So we're bringing a little bit of our own mm-hmm. histories and traditions and just things that we like. So I really like that we switch houses because I think it gives everybody a chance to, you know, decorate their own house and like be cozy at their own place. And it gives all of the rest of us that chance to kind of like feel like we're going away mm-hmm. or, and you know, my favorite part about it is how present we are with each other. It is really nice because the event doesn't just last like an hour. It's not like a quick in and out or oh, sorry, I'm running late. Mm-hmm. I feel like around the holidays, people are often trying to fit like 500 social obligations in like mm-hmm. the 31 days of December. So I like that we're just there and, you know, everybody knows we're there. Like, and sometimes we do FaceTimes with other people who aren't there. Mm-hmm. That's fun too. What about mm-hmm. you, Percy? Like, what do you enjoy the most?
I think it's definitely the time together and blocking off and the sleeping over too.
Like I love the sleepover part.
Yeah.
And, like, oh, the pajamas.
Yeah.
We do like we
and
get
coffee in the morning. Like I'm usually up first. So like I'll put the coffee pot on and then I feel like everyone hears the coffee pot and it like brings
starts
out
stirring,
some people.
You start smelling it.
And also I do like the rotating of the houses. I really like, and I think this is where the chosen family part comes in. And this is what people get from their families is I like that I know where I'll be next Christmas.
Right.
And I know that I will be surrounded by people that I love at Christmas.
Right.
And just like that, being able to forecast and see yourself in the future in positive ways. Like, this is our third Christmas in Cape Breton, but it's finally our turn to host. I've been looking forward to hosting all year, you know, and it gives you something to look forward to. And then we'll start the cycle again. But that is some of what makes it feel like a tradition is just kind of agreeing we'll do this again next year. And the structure of that, I really like that as well.
I like that we do something different. You know, when we tell people that we do this, they usually get pretty excited and you can see that they think that that's really cool. And so I'm just really grateful that this is how we get to spend our holidays, that we're not, none of us are alone.
I love that everyone that is going to be there, I'm actually very happy that they're there. And
right.
I'm looking
You're
forward
not
to
dreading.
There's no one that I'm dreading seeing. There's right. no one that I'm like, oh, hope they don't bring this topic up or
right.
something. And I think that also is nice about Chosen family is it is chosen and you're choosing to be together
right.
and there's like less conflict for us at least, and there's just more gratitude too.
Yeah, I'm so grateful for everyone's time.
Yeah because everyone's busy, right? And like we're kind of scattered around Cape Breton, so it feels good to get to be together kind of intentionally. And the other thing with Chosen family is like I feel like we've figured out ways to, I don't know, like, there's just something about when you know that someone is choosing to be there with you and they don't have to be there, that feels good.
Not by default.
So what would you say to someone who either through distance or estrangement doesn't have a biological family really to spend the holidays with, and maybe has friends or is trying to broach the subject of chosen family with the people they're close to, and wanting to start these traditions, start kind of creating their own community?
That's really good thought. I think a lot about that for myself because there's a couple Christmases I spent alone. And for me, that didn't feel lonely. I know that there's this big emphasis on you always have to be with people at Christmas. You don't want anybody to be alone or for whatever holidays are around this time that you celebrate. And for me, sometimes just being by myself, like especially in my early 20s, was so healing. It was great, you know, and I had people, you know, reach out here and there. I went to a really beautiful, like, church celebration. It's not the same faith that I grew up in. And I had friends come over and we just did brunch and stuff like that. So I think that I'm not sure that many people would be able to right off the bat just find something like how what we kind of created. It kind of came out of circumstance that we were all away and not going home that year. But I would say just to be open, because that might look like you joining someone else's family's mm-hmm. holidays and celebrations. And that might look like you doing more things on your own that day, but doing something with a group of people. You know, I would say there's no shame in having boundaries, or if, you know, if there is an estrangement for any reason, like there's no shame in that. Like we all need to do the things we need to do to get by. So I would just say that if you know people that are doing a holiday thing, like you could either be brave and bold and ask if you could join in or, you know, suggest to some other people, you know, like maybe we could do something. It took a couple of years for me to get to this point, like probably about 10 years between when I stopped celebrating the holidays with my family and getting to this chosen family spot. But I did little things in between.
I think that there's more people than you think.
Yes.
That either won't be spending the holidays with their family of origin or would love a different option. So I think that's like the first thing, is to know that you're definitely not alone in that. And so putting it out there, asking me what their plans are for the holidays. And if they're like, oh, I'm not sure, whatever, you know, maybe there's an opportunity to do something together. And it doesn't have to, you don't have to do Christmas. Like you could go to the movies, you could do something else, you know, like you don't have to like pull all that together. Or asking if you can join in. I feel like when I was younger, my parents would always be like, if you need a friend, be a friend. And I think that for us and our chosen family, it was also like all of us kind of needed a family. And so then it's like, if you need a family, be a family.
On the topic of family, chosen or otherwise, I knew for this special I wanted to speak to someone for whom the holidays can be a hard time due to the loss of a loved one, because unfortunately, I think a lot of us, myself included, can relate to this. When people began reaching out for this topic, I noticed a few people mentioning a specific type of loss, the death of a pet. I think it can be overlooked that the holiday season can be a time of remembering not only our human family that has passed on, but also our furry family. I spoke to Ming about how we can create traditions that keep those memories alive.
So my name is Ming. I use he, him pronouns. I'm a newer resident of Cape Breton. I was living in Southern Ontario before here and then sort of all over the place. I'm a first generation immigrant to Canada. My parents came to Canada when I was 10 years old. And I work in the mental health field. So that's a little bit about who I am.
You wanted to speak today on pet grief around the holidays.
Yeah. I just wanted to talk about how losing an animal can be a hard time throughout the year. And I think especially over the holiday season, because it is generally considered to be a festive time of year. And so it can be hard to sit with other emotions. I mean, grief is a lot of different emotions. It's not just sadness, although sadness is definitely a big part of it. And so I know a lot of people who are going through loss of an animal, and it can be hard to talk about because there's not as many rituals around the loss of an animal as there are around the loss of humans. As a culture, we're not very good with grief in general, but generally speaking, there's more recognition and awareness that if a friend or a colleague or a family member experiences the loss of a person, there's condolences. You know, we send flowers, we send over casseroles, we give hugs, that kind of thing. And so sometimes it can be hard to talk about loss of an animal because sometimes people can be dismissive or minimizing or just say, you know, oh, it's just a cat or just a dog or just a whatever. And so, yeah, I wanted to bring that up because it's a valid thing to experience during this time of year.
Well, what animal did you lose?
So last June, I was moving between provinces. I have been living out in rural, remote BC for 8 months, and I had brought my cats with me. And so I had moved back to southern Ontario to Barrie at the time into my family's home. And then during that process, shortly after that process, my cat Star went out and was never found again. And so I never really knew what happened to her. I still don't know to this day. So part of it is just coping with the not knowing. And that's been difficult.
Was there anything specific that you did with Star for the holidays?
So Star was actually one of those, like a lot of people, I had adopted animals during the pandemic. I think it was it's a lonely time, a challenging time for many of us. And we found comfort and consolation in, you know, living things that aren't humans because we weren't allowed or it wasn't safe to be around a lot of humans. So I adopted her during 2021. Kind of in the midst of lockdown. And, you know, she and I just spent a lot of time cuddling on the couch, reading books and playing and just generally providing comfort to each other. And so whenever I read books now, I think about her. Or, you know, when I get the chance to touch another animal or a person, I kind of think of her.
So do you read any kind of specific books to remember Star?
I really love graphic novels, comics, and so Star was there when I read a lot of these books. And so whenever I read kind of silly, kind of funny comics, I think of her. Just any lighthearted things, or when I make art, I also think of her because I took a lot of photos of her. And yeah, she was there for a lot of my kind of pandemic artistic endeavors.
How are you trying to keep her memory alive outside of books and outside of reading?
So I actually ended up adopting more cats, which I think, again, this is an experience many people have where, you know, to cope through loss, we kind of tend to focus on helping something else or helping another being. I started visiting the SPCA a lot just to kind of look at the cats, pet them, get to know them a little bit. And also get to know the people who work there and spend their time there. That's been a nice way to connect. I connect with her through just beauty because she was a very beautiful cat. Just anything from nature to doing something that feels good, like moving my body or breathing the air or even looking out onto a nice, beautiful river or a lake or the ocean can connect me with her. And obviously because her name is Star, when I see the stars in the sky, I think of her.
Is it hard this time of year missing her?
Yeah, like there's that again, when I'm in a, you know, a festive, anything that's very festive can feel very, very overwhelming because then I feel a very intense feeling of sadness, and it can be really hard to cope with that feeling of sadness and also know that so many other people actually deal with, you know, feelings of pain or sadness this time of year, not just because of pet loss or animal loss, but because of a lot of different things. So it's kind of making space for both. It's making space for joy and sadness. Right? Yeah, it can be hard to be around, you know, kind of there's this expectation to be happy and festive. Right?
And it's almost sometimes I find, at least when I have struggled with loss, there's almost this guilt in feeling joy and feeling happiness and being involved in things. It's almost, there's this unspoken almost timeline where I shouldn't be celebrating right now. Do you feel that as well?
Yeah, it's both that, you know, there's the I shouldn't be celebrating or I shouldn't be feeling joy or I shouldn't be relaxing and just sitting back and enjoying. And also, I shouldn't rain on people's parade. I shouldn't just bawl my house out in this moment, right? So there's a lot of shouldn'ts with loss and grief, and it's really hard.
What do you find helps when you're in those moments of grief?
I find it helpful to connect with animals. Like, animals are very intuitive, so people might be more focused on, you know, either just celebrating or talking or whatnot. But animals are very intuitive, right? There's no emotion that you can experience that an animal doesn't pick up on. So, you know, even just being around a supportive dog or, you know, even sitting on the ground can be very grounding. Yeah.
And what kind of advice would you have for anybody who's going through this kind of grief at this time?
You know, I think I read somewhere that we get bombarded with advice when we're grieving, right? Or when we're grieving the loss of an animal or loss of a person or loss of anything, really. So I think the thing that stuck out to me is that we have the right to feel whatever we feel, and whether it's anger or sadness or joy or lightheartedness, right? Like, and to, we have the right to discard any advice or information that we find not helpful and take what's helpful.
And how can someone be an ally to a friend who's experiencing loss?
I think just listening, like just listening and, you know, connecting to the parts of yourself that feels pain too, right? Like, and that can be hard, right? It can be really hard and vulnerable. So I think there's not necessarily anything to do, but just kind of making space and hearing those stories and, you know, asking about that person's animal, because they might have some really happy memories and really joyful memories that they want to share too. And it's not all just loss, right? There is, that animal probably was very important to that person. So what are some great things that they remember around that? That's also important too. So, yeah.
What is your favorite memory that you have with Star?
My favorite, well, it's funny because she's actually a very outdoorsy cat, and she, you know, I have this memory of her being this kind of cute and kind of soft and, you know, very cuddly animal. She's also kind of vicious, right? She would bring home like lots of mice and unfortunately a few birds too, which I'm very sad about. But my favorite memory is just her coming home in the morning with yet another present, and I will have to bury that mouse.
Is there anything you'd like the public, anybody who's listening, to know about Star?
Star is a very intuitive animal who is very perceptive to people's pain and suffering and emotions, and she's very good at comforting. So I just want to say that. Yeah.
To help keep her memory alive and help her be known to more people. I think that's a thing with loss is, was it the line, you die twice? You die when you first, your physical body, and then the second when your name is spoken for the last time. So I think even just trying to tell the stories of the people and the animals that we've lost keeps their memory going, keeps their memory alive for longer than their physical body is around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're totally right.
Rachel from Sydney has a Star Wars marathon every holiday season. Bryson from Dominion's favorite tradition is putting up the ornaments that have been in his family for 9 generations. James from Sydney's childhood tradition was burning his letter to Santa so that the magical smoke will carry it to the North Pole. If you'll let me,
I'd like to share some of my personal traditions. Every year, I try to get to the Santa Claus Parade and the Big Craft Fair at Center 200. I like to listen to Kenny and Dolly's Once Upon a Christmas at least once during the season, and I love to sip on a hot chocolate with a mint tea bag in it when the weather gets cold. But where did I get those traditions from? I feel like those of us that carry our childhood traditions forward may not think about how they got started. For me, a lot of them come from my mother and my grandmother. I think that sometimes when we become adults and we have that common feeling of it just doesn't feel like Christmas this year, it's not only the stress and the pressure we may feel during the holidays, but also that we may be missing the labor, both visible and invisible, our parents and grandparents, especially mothers and grandmothers, did to make the holiday season feel magical. Now, in a special conversation, I wanted to learn more about the origins of my traditions, so I spoke to the expert. Hi, Mom.
Hello, Anne.
So, a few of my traditions, at least, come from you and Nanny, especially listening to Kenny and Dolly when decorating and going to the Santa Claus parade every year, pretty much. And then all my friends drink those candy cane hot chocolates, but I still stick to a hot chocolate with a mint tea bag in it.
Oh, that's sweet. Yes, that was a really nice time. The Santa Claus parades really bring back a lot of memories for me, as well as like just the anticipation building up to Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
You guys would just be essentially vibrating by the time Christmas Eve rolled around. Yeah, no, a lot of really great memories of Christmas Eve and you guys being so excited, and with the tradition of going to church Christmas Eve, you knew coming back it was to get the cookies and the milk ready for Santa, and then it was so important to get the sleep. And your dad and I would set up the video camera after you guys all went to sleep. And then we'd be furiously wrapping till 2:30 in the morning to make sure that everything was in place for you guys in the morning. Yeah, then in the mornings we would, one of you, usually you, would have us up first. And that stayed true right through your teenage years. would have us up. And then we'd all go downstairs together to see what Santa had brung. Well, I don't know if you remember the reindeer dust as well. The
reindeer dust?
We had reindeer dust that we would put out for a treat for the reindeer.
Oh, yes, 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 yeah.
Yes.
It was the oats and stuff.
Yeah, we would sprinkle that around. We would buy it at the market every year, the Christmas market. And then when we had made up the plate of cookies and milk, we would go outside and sprinkle the treat for the reindeer. That's a really good memory too. And then, you know, it's funny because it evolves. Like there's so many memories of when you guys were little, and then it changes into teenagers. And like I say, you always chose to get everybody in the house up on Christmas Day. We kind of had an expectation that the younger children would do that. But no, Cora was on par every single Christmas. And yeah, but I mean, it evolves, of course,
yeah,
as we grow older. But some of the best memories are just simply being a family and getting to enjoy the time together and the lights. Mm-hmm. We would go for Christmas drives just to see all the beautiful lights that were in the Sydney River area.
I remember
there
that.
Used to be, there was a house close to Westmount that we would go and see, and it had an incredible display of lights. And all the oohs and the ahs, you know, are a great, great memory.
Did any of, like, the traditions, like, with Kenny and Dolly setting up the camera, like, anything come from your family that you kind of brought forward to do with us?
The listening to Kenny and Dolly came from my parents. My mom would always have Kenny and Dolly playing as she decorated, and just especially in those last few days leading up to Christmas. When I had you guys, it was just, I really wanted you guys to experience that same environment. Like,
I remember going up to visit Nanny and Grampy too, and it was always winter. It was always snowing.
Yeah, always snowing. Back then, Christmases were very different because we had snow through November and December. So when we would take a yearly trip up to Nanny and Grampy's before Christmas, we would run into all sorts of weather.
Do you have any favorite childhood traditions from when you were growing up?
I think my favorite is childhood tradition, which I really would have liked to carry on with you guys, was that my dad and my grandmother would always stay overnight Christmas Eve, and she would have to sleep in between myself and my sister. We shared a bed. So I would wake up Christmas morning and my grandmother would be in a little ball at my feet because us being kids, we'd kind of push her out of the way. And I'd wake up, and then nobody was allowed to touch the tree until my grandmother and my mom and dad had had Christmas breakfast. And then where I grew up with having animals, my father always had to go out and feed all the animals before we could open our gifts. And so there was like more anticipation building and building and building. And so then my father would sit down and pass out every individual present under the tree. So you weren't allowed to touch and shake and evaluate or do anything like that. And it's one real special tradition that I remember about Christmas. Actually, it's probably the biggest one.
Nice.
Along with the Kenny and Dolly. But
yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. That sticks with me so much. I think it's because all the Christmas decorations were out, the smell of all the candles and stuff that have been packed away. And like, it was like you said, the anticipation. I think that's kind of part of a lot of my traditions that I've carried on from you are about, it's not about the day itself, but the anticipation leading up to it.
Even making the Christmas cookies with you guys, all the little things that added up to something bigger.
I think the tradition should bring back that feeling of Christmas, and the focus should be more on the things that we do together. And whether we're creating our own traditions or carrying ones on, that those are the things that I know that feel, that make it feel like Christmas. They're the things that I remember the most rather than the gifts I got every year.
Yes, and that's, I think, why I find it so hard to recall in the moment how we celebrated, because I think most of my memories are just the pleasant emotions surrounding Christmas and having us all together and the family meals at Nanny's, and primarily it's a time spent together.
Absolutely.
Above all else, like, and I know that we have spoken about in terms of we'd far rather spend our money on making time together happen than the commercial side of the gift giving. Something that I find true as I get older too is that a lot of people find these holidays hard because perhaps their family isn't around. But at the same time, Christmas is about having people that you hold near and dear to your heart, whether it's family or not. All the people that are out there that are struggling this year because they have to be away from family for financial reasons or whatnot. Yeah, I definitely feel for them. Just remember, you know, your friends are like family.
Do you feel like your traditions, the ones that you did in childhood, they came from your mom?
Well, actually, I believe it was pretty much an even split, where Grampy loved to watch us have our anticipation for opening the gifts and where he was made in charge of distributing the gifts. He had a lot of fun with that, you know, like he'd go to give us a gift and then take it back. And I just remember him, his laughter repeatedly over, you know, the faces and the posts we were making and everything that we're trying to do to coerce him into picking our gift next. And yeah, and my mom's traditions of the Kenny and Dolly. And she would always go to bed really early Christmas Eve because she knew that in the morning she would get up and put the turkey on and have it ready for our family by noon. There's all sorts of little traditions. It's funny, Cora, they don't, it truly is about just being together with family.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
you're biological or otherwise.
Biological or otherwise. People that you care about and love.
Well, that's it for me. I hope wherever you are and whoever you're spending it with, that you have a cozy, safe holiday season. I hope if you want to be surrounded by family, whatever that looks like to you, that you are. And I hope that if you want to have some quiet time alone, that you get to do so. Remember that this time of year can be as busy or as still as you want it to be, and that you shouldn't put undue pressure or stress on yourself just because the calendar seems to say you should. Create new traditions that reflect what you truly want to make time for during the holiday season, and take care of yourself. See you in the new year.